You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavs podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at fearthestore.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, wherever else you get your podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show. You can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and I'm on Twitter and Facebook as well at CWM Wright. So today's show just is going to catch you up on everything from the Cavs' last few practices, some of the storylines coming out of it. They do play their first preseason game on Monday night. That's at 6 p.m. against a club from Argentina. They will follow it up later this week with a away game against the Detroit Pistons and then play the Boston Celtics twice before the regular season gets started towards the end of the month. Monday's game is going to be one of the few, hopefully the only one I'm not at this year, just have something that's going to keep me back in my home base. But we'll be watching it, writing about it, if you're the Sword, podcasting about it as well there. So first thing up, kind of the weirdest thing to come out of these last couple of days is that Jordan Clarkson might play some three. So last Thursday, John Beilein, the Cavs head coach, said that Clarkson could spend some time at the three as the Cavs try and get the many, many guards they have on their roster on the field. To recap, the guards on the roster are top pick Darius Garland. He's a lock to play. Colin Sexton, last year's top pick, a lock to play. Jordan Clarkson, seemingly a lock to play. Matthew Dellavedova and Brandon Knight, both of whom we'll kind of talk about later. You know, I think KPJ, Kevin Porter Jr., is a two at this point as well, but he's probably going to play up as some three. Jetty Osman, I think, profiles as a 2-3. Windler kind of in that same boat, but they're all going to play a little bit up. But they have a lot of guards. There's a lot of guys that should be playing that one or the two spot. Ideally, and I think that makes some weird kind of sets. You know, I think it's a much bigger deal defensively, based on Beilein's system, but the Cavs might be bad on defense anyway. And this is something that I think we're going to need to see if this actually becomes a thing before we overreact to it or freak out about it. I think it's bad in concept, but I'd want to see if Beilein's really going to use this a significant amount, what it looks like, etc. Okay, so Beilein says, quote, Jordan Clarkson is going to move over and play some three-man. With Dylan's injury, he's going to be over there. You've got to have a wolf mentality as a small forward and some of the things we do. There's not a better wolf on the team than Jordan Clarkson. He's hunting. We need a hunter at that position. Wolf, to translate in Beilein's system, is someone who's going to go get shots. He's going to look to score, and that's the role of that type of player in Beilein's system. I think this makes sense for Clarkson in an offensive role. It's a role he's going to be comfortable in. I think that's kind of his main MO as a player anyway. It's him going out chasing shots, chasing open looks for himself, and really kind of looking to score more than really doing anything else. For his career, I think one of the big knocks on him and the thing that's kind of made him, you know, maybe a bit frustrating is that he does sometimes get tunnel vision. He does sometimes to score and makes him, you know, aside from the defensive concerns, a weird fit with other guards. For his career, if you look at his assist percentage, his best assist percentage came in 2014-15. He was 22 years old, first year in the league, 23.8% on that Lakers team in about 1,500 minutes. Second best is the combined year he came to the Cavs. That was at 19.3%. If you look at that, and if you look at last year, it was the second lowest of his career at 15.6%, or third lowest of his career, excuse me. That's not something, even though he has high usage rates, last year actually the high usage rate of his career, almost 30%, with actually a pretty decent turnover at under 10%. What Jordan does is he's going to go out and chase shots. Jordan Clarkson, his value is fully derived from getting shots. If you look at his shooting numbers, if you look at last year, for example, he played in about 2,200 minutes. He had an effective field goal percentage of 3-2-1 of 50.9%, which is at the same number he had his full year in 2017-2018 when he came to Cleveland. They had 50% in 2016-17. It's actually something that has gotten a little bit better every year. So he can score. I'm a believer to some extent in Jordan Clarkson as a scorer. I think he's kind of best served in a role we've never really seen him in, which is him kind of being set up to score more so than just being allowed to attack on his own. I think when he is just given freedom to really go on his own and just kind of create, I think there's some limitations to that. I think when he gets it up and gets to make simple reads, I think he can be a really, really effective scorer. That could work in Bielan's system. You can talk me into that. I think it's something in a role he'll be really comfortable in. Now, I think questions do come out of this. You know, number one, this would be a big change from anything he's played in terms of an offense in the NBA. I can't speak exactly to what the systems he played in with the Lakers, but I don't think they were anything like what Bielan is going to be running this year. So how does he fit into that? How comfortable does he feel in that? Can he be really efficient in that? That's kind of going to dictate a lot of this. And, you know, I think that's a question for him overall as we look at his 2019-20 season. It's certainly for as long as he's going to be with the Cavs. But that, if he's going to play the three, that's going to be his kind of thing, what does that mean? And, you know, then the follow-up question that is obviously, how does that affect other players? And I think specifically, what does that mean for Garland and Sexton? I cited the stats a bunch of times on the show, written about them, talked about them on radio hits, etc. The Colin Sexton, Jordan Clarkson lineups overall were a pretty clear negative last year. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think nothing good came out of them. You know, I don't think they were completely useless, but that was his most common pairing last year. For Jordan Clarkson, he played 1,138 minutes and 46 seconds with Colin Sexton last year. They shared the floor that much. That's 10-plus minutes more than him and Clarkson and Nance and, about 40-plus more than Clarkson and Osman. If you look at the point differential, Clarkson and Nance was the best two-man duo, which I think there's some logic there. Him and Nwaba in about 700 minutes was the next one. His second worst among the top 10 most common lineups per Basketball Reference, his most common two-man lineups, was Clarkson and Sexton. That's a clear negative. Again, there are things I liked. I think it got better based on film as things went on during the year. But it's overall a net negative for the team. And I think there's just some overlap there. And you throw Darius Garland into the mix, I think that complicates it even more. So how does he play the three? I don't think if they roll out Sexton, Garland, Clarkson at the three, I think that's a really weird thing. But if you slide, are you going to slide Dele in there? Are you going to slide Brandon Knight in there? Have him play off ball? Is Windler, KPJ, Jetty going to kind of fill in some there? And he's just like a nominal three, even if he's not actually the three man. I think there's just some kind of questions. We need to see how it fleshed out before we sort of understand what that actually means. Bielan, I think overall, if you take what he says so far, I think the big thing is looking at it, kind of keeping stock of it, keeping track of it, and then let's see how it's actually applied in games before we make any real evaluations here. I think he's owed that. I think that's the only way to fairly kind of evaluate him, and I would just say, too, like, that's the way I think he's really going to approach this. He's not going to tip his hand very much on what he's going to do when he's talking to us. I think the other big question here is what Clarkson to the three means defensively. I wonder if this would mean they would play more zone just to avoid having Clarkson defending guys one-on-one. I don't think him defending threes, even if they're smaller, like Portland, like this could work against Portland. If you tell me he can like survive on Rodney Hood, like sure, I can talk myself into that. Or if you're playing a team that has just like a smaller set of wings and is playing the same style, like I can, if it's you're matching size, I can sort of make that work in my head. But I think zone's still going to be their way to go. Clarkson's a bad one-on-one defender, one of the worst point guards in the league, according to defensive RPM last year. You give up a zillion points with him, I think, in a man-to-man scheme. We'll get to the defense a little bit later. There were some interesting comments from him and Larry Nance on what the scheme's going to look like. I just don't think there's really going to be a way to do this right defensively if he's going to play the three. We'll see what that sort of looks like. We'll see what that kind of means, but I think this is a really fascinating question, and I'll be curious to see how much we actually see of it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the way out, you're going to hear one John Beilein talking about the process of learning. Shouts to Spin Davies for the audio for this one, but he talks about how he views learning. I think it's a really interesting quote from John Beilein. You're going to hear that, hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
And I've learned this from my assistants. We talked to them today about the four stages of learning, right? One is you're unconsciously incompetent. You do not know what you don't know. Then you become consciously incompetent. You know that you're messing up, but you can't do anything about it. Then you become consciously competent. You got to think about it. You can do it. And the goal with everybody is to become unconsciously competent. That you have to think about it. Think about tying your shoe the first time. Right? You tied your shoe the first time, and you had to think about it. Somebody had to teach you. Not one of us thinks about which one goes over the right or the left. So if we can get good players that can do that, right, then we're going to be a good team. They don't have to think as much on the court. So learning curve different for every player on the team. And you got to understand it. If any of you have children, you know everybody's different, and they all have a different learning curve, and you can't make comparisons.
Okay, we're back again. There's John Beilein on the process of learning. I think the four stages of learning. I think it's just a really interesting quote. Let's talk about Brandon Knight. So Beilein said early last week, if you're about time listening to this, that the Cavs rotation is going to have 10 to 12 people in it, with 10 being the sweet spot. So you can look at the whole roster. I think there are some guys that obviously are not going to be in there. You know, like the two-way player Dean Wade's not going to be in there. You know, I think there's a limit on how many guards really can actually play. I think something will have to give there, would sort of be my guess. My earliest guess, and I think Monday is going to offer us a bit more clarity on sort of what all this means, is that at the very beginning of camp, in the very beginning of this season, this process of this 2019-20 Cavs team, Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, Larry Nance, Jetty Osman, Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Knight, Delly, John Henson, KPJ, Dylan Windler. Those are the guys that are going to get minutes. Now, that obviously, I think, leaves a couple interesting-ish names off that list. I think that means Ante Zizic is off the list. He's got a very cheap contract this year. Depends on what you really think of him. I don't quite really have a good read on what the Cavs think of Ante. And that leaves Sindarius Thornwell, assuming he's on the team. Now, I think Sindarius has a really good chance to get in the rotation just by virtue of the fact that he's the best defender on the roster already. I think there could just be a need for him. You know, I would rather play him than one of the other guards. I'm obviously not John Beilein. He knows much more about basketball than I ever will. But that's kind of just what I would look at that and say he can at least fill in. He'd take some pressure off Jetty and other guys to actually defend at a high, high level. So I think Knight and Henson are two of the more kind of interesting-ish names to me because we haven't – Knight was on the team last year, played a lot obviously, but flew under the radar a little bit. Henson comes in, hasn't never played a game for the Cavs, is definitely the best shot blocker on the team. And I think there's definitely an argument that he should have some run and should get at least a chance to play, even if it's a weird fit on the roster with the vast number of bigs. He's not super young, you know, isn't part of the team long term, etc. You know, Knight, as a lot of people have kind of said in camp, I think is turning heads. To quote Beilein, Brandon has been impressive since the first day I saw him. He's a pro as far as his approach to his game. Every time he stretches, he's always early. He leaves late. A very quiet leader in his mannerisms. I really like so much about him. I'm really looking forward to coaching him, both him and Jordan. I don't know why I grouped them together. I guess both of them are guards in the same size that can play the position. They both have been really great examples for our young guys of how a pro goes about his business. Knight, as you're going to hear here in this clip, really did seem to have a good summer, which is good for him. He's had injuries. He's had a weird couple years. You know, he tore his ACL in like a charity game or something like that not too long ago and like caused him to miss a season. In the last year of a big contract, he certainly got a lot to prove this year. He's going to come in motivated. He's still, you know, not old by any means. He could get another good deal, maybe not as much as he's making this year, which, to remind you, According as tracked by the Great Early Bird Rights, is $15.6 million. He's the third highest paid Cavalier at the current moment, which is, tells you a lot about the state of the roster. But here's what he's had to say about his summer when he, you know, spoke to the media the other day for the first time since he wasn't among the players made available at camp.
When was the last time you had a healthy summer?
Oh, man. I probably couldn't tell you. I mean, probably like 2 or 3 years ago. It's been a long time. So this is my first healthy summer in a long time, and I approached it way differently. I rested this summer, so that was new for me. And I just approached it differently, just looked around the league at, you know, how guys take care of their bodies. And I really put probably more time into that part of my summer than working out. And that was new for me. I put some things in my house, spent some money, really invested in my body just to try to make sure, I got the most out of it.
How do you think that will help you get through the 82 game run in a different way?
I think it'll help me. I mean, just like I said, I've learned to pace myself. I've learned the things to do for recovery and just the little things that, you can do every day, every night to take care of your body that I kind of didn't really think were important when I was young, but stretching is important.
So you hear there, Brandon Knight, when he says stretching is important, he has a little smile on his face. Like, it just seems like it's something that he's coming to realize. Maybe it's like, obviously he's been stretching, but like him learning about that, and if that, you know, is as accurate as and as big of a deal as he says it is, seems like kind of an important thing. Body maintenance is such a huge deal. Kevin Love, for instance, puts a ton of investment into that. LeBron, obviously, like, it's his own, he has his own stuff that he does to kind of really get him going, and it's an ongoing trend. It's a big, really interesting part of what the Cavs are doing. You know, the Cavs, as a franchise, have a director of sports science now. Like, that's someone they hired, like, a week or two ago. So this is a really interesting part of modern basketball. I would just say right now, when you think about Knight, you think about Henson, you think about every guy that's kind of doesn't have like the draft status or whatever to kind of guarantee him some minutes or at least a shot at minutes. It's just a weird roster construction. Again, I think there's just so many questions about what's going to come, about what this roster is really going to look like. We need to see it organized in a game setting. We need to see how Beilein adjusts the rotation. Having some stuff just kind of play out. I think we really need to get to that point before we can really understand it. We'll see if guys like Thornwell and Zizic get their chances and what how big of a chance they might get. We'll see if, you know, maybe Jarrell Martin does really, really well or something like that. Well, again, we're going to see more once Beilein puts guys on the floor and we see kind of things that he do. Maybe Timothy Luwalu-Cabarro, however you pronounce his last name, does something kind of interesting. Knight is going to be one of those guys that is going to, I think, get a chance. He's obviously someone the Cavs might like to flip because of that expiring contract. But on a human level, I just hope the guy gets a chance to be healthy. Some of the stuff he's talking about, I hope that does pay off for him. That would be really, really cool to see, just to see him kind of be healthy and get a chance to be a solid NBA player. Like, I don't think he was ever, you know, like a high level top five point guard or anything, but he was a good player. And I think he's more, it's unfortunate for him how these last couple years have really gone for him. As for Beilein, look, he's, again, going to be coy about who his starters are going to be. He's, you know, he's, we'll get to this again in the next segment, but, like, he's basically said, like, don't take who I start right away as, like, my day one set starters. But Knight is a part of how this is going to come together. I really, really cannot wait to see how it unfolds. And what a guy like him who's, you know, again, in this position where he doesn't have the ideal role for him. It's a new coach. It's young guards that play his position, but he's trying to earn the next contract. How that dynamic plays out and how it sort of unfolds as long as these guys like him and Clarkson and Delly and whatever are on the roster, I think that's a real interesting to see how it kind of plays out. All right, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to be back with more of this episode. If you haven't already, please go check out Locked On Browns. Get that in your earbuds tonight before Browns 49ers on Monday Night Football. Jeff Lloyd is just a machine, cranks out some great podcasts, and check out Locked On NBA. Monday through Friday shows are excellent. You cover the whole league in that one feed. Subscribe. They're all just going to show up right up. Wherever you get your Locked On Cavs podcasts, you can go get Locked On NBA, get Locked On Browns. My personal favorite, David Ramil, Wes Goldberg, and Ben Golliver on Tuesday. So check that out and subscribe again wherever you get Locked On Cavs, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever. We'll be right back. And we're back. Chris Manning here with Locked On Cavs. Last segment of this show for Monday, October 7th. Darius Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. earning rave reviews. Okay, so to start with Garland, he is going to play Monday, according to John Beilant, against Buenos Aires San Lorenzo. That's an Argentinian club, as obviously the play at Buenos Aires. According to Beilant, he participated in that 5-on-5 scrimmage the Cavs had on Saturday, closed-door scrimmage. That's a good sign for him. He's had that little foot issue, and I think they were just being very, very slow with him. I frankly have no idea if he's going to start on Monday or not. I would be a little surprised just based on wanting to bring him in slowly, bring him in kind of as things kind of come. Again, Beilant's being very coy about all of this. I would not infer too much about what Monday means. It's still kind of early in this process. You know, we'll see, if, for instance, how many minutes Kevin Love actually plays. If you remember, he got hurt in the preseason last year. Not a need to play him more than you really kind of need to just to get him some minutes on the floor. The real growth is really going to come training camp or after training camp. But maybe, you know, Beilant views it differently considering, you know, he has talked about how it's different for him in preparing in a week for a game versus like having several months as he did when he was at Michigan and in the various other college stops he had. So we'll be interested to see kind of how that all kind of plays itself out. I really want to see what we get from Garland. I think he's going to be a lot of fun. I think he's going to shoot threes. I think he's going to take deep threes. I think he's just going to be a really interesting, fun player to watch. I can't wait to see what his preseason debut kind of looks like Monday, what kind of situations he get in, and you know how much the Cavs really let him do. I'm curious to hear from him too. We haven't heard from him since media day, and I think there's just going to be some really interesting stuff to come from him once he gets on the court. But I think it's fair to be that they're slow with him. I think, you know, you don't want to rush him. It's too early to kind of rush him. It's not like this I think from everything I understand, he could have played if this was like a finals game or something like that. But it's so early in his career, so early in the season, no need to rush him. So the other thing here, again, is Kevin Porter Jr. has been, if not the star, one of the stars of camp. Good vibes around the Cavs right now in general, I would say, which is a change from last year. The Cavs had a very, from everything I've heard, a very active, lively scrimmage over the weekend. He was one of the best players in that scrimmage, had some of the moments that really stood out in that scrimmage. Here to quote Larry Nance Jr. from him on Sunday, he said, quote, "He's a gamer. I think that's the best way to put it. You get him out there and we can be going through drills that don't best suit him, then walking through stuff that doesn't best suit him. But you roll the ball out and say, go get a bucket. He very well might. I'd love to see him go in a one-on-one game against Jordan Clarkson. It might never end. KP is good, but I think he has a chance to be great." Kevin Porter Jr., to me, that's the current read on him. He's not a guy that's going to thrive in drills necessarily, but he's going to go out, he's going to score, he's going to be a ton of fun. I think one of the things that makes him so interesting with this Cavs group is Beilant's going to coach him up. Beilant is going to be a guy that's going to try to make him more efficient. He's already talked about wanting to make him a more efficient basketball player. If he can do that and harness that talent, like, Kevin Porter Jr. could be a legitimate steal at 30. I think that's the excitement about him. That's the intrigue of him. You know, I don't think taking him at, you know, 5 or whatever would have made any sense, but I think where you got him, and clearly the Cavs do believe in him considering they spent a bunch of money to go get that pick to take him, a record number for that slot. I think that tells you a lot, and I think him in a structure like Beilant and what that the end result of that is, and we're not going to know that in 40 games, probably even a full season. I think that's like a next year going into year 3 kind of thing, if you know, assuming Beilant's around, etc. What that looks like, I think, is really, really interesting, and I want to see what that kind of harnessing looks like. But he's drawing rave reviews. I've had a couple chances to talk to him. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. Seems like he just, like, he's a hooper, and I think there's something kind of to that. And something I think sometimes in this age of analytics and watching all this tape and stuff, I think sometimes there is something to what Larry Nance is describing that we don't really, like, value as much as we should. Like, Kyrie is like that, you know? He's obviously got some, like, personality quirks, but, like, him and KD are like, they are hoopers. Not to say they aren't great in skills, not to say that KPJ, like, isn't good at certain drills, but, like, there's something to just being out and going out and, like, being able to perform on the court. I just want to ride this hype train with KPJ. I can't wait to see him in action. Really curious to see what kind of lineups and stuff he's going to be in come Monday night. Okay, to end today's show, you're just going to hear back-to-back clips courtesy of Spin Davies. about what Danton Clarkson had to say about the defense JB Bickerstaff is organizing. So you're going to hear that clip as we exit today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Again, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, wherever you get podcasts. If you want to contact the show, you can email me at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. You can tweet us at lockedoncavs. Going to be back tomorrow with a recap of Monday night's game against Buenos Aires, San Lorenzo, and then also kind of a look at what Colin Sexton could be having upcoming this season. We're going to do our kind of a player, 10-minute player outlook on one Colin Sexton. But that's going to be it. But here is that audio clip. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
We know a lot of teams that, you know, hunting threes. A lot of teams are, you know, trying to take away from shooting a lot of mid-range jump shots. And then we got to keep guys out the paint. So, I mean, I feel like that's everybody's focus. Just everything that we are doing defensively is really focused on us, our strengths, what we're doing.
I mean, being more at the four instead of the five, you know, I'm way more built to be switching and guarding guards on the perimeter than I am bigs in the post. So, you know, I just think his defensive style is going to be really good for us, because it's going to be one of those cultures that, hey, if we don't play defense, you don't play, period. And I love it. Yeah. Rim protection has been something that we've been harping on. You know, obviously having Henson this year is nice. You know, with his length in there, he's a good shot blocker. You know, the rest of us really been keying in on it. You know, I've been more of a steals guy for the majority of my career, but you know, we're certainly starting to hone in on blocking shots and getting that timing right.
I think that's one of the biggest things that we picked up this year, with John being healthy, him being able to go up there and contest a lot of shots on drive-bys and us running guys off the three-point line, forcing him into taking tough twos. And then you got Tristan and, you know, Larry, you know, Kev contesting at the rim as well. But I feel like that was our biggest thing that we picked up on this summer, was you know, John getting healthy and having protection at the rim. So JB's doing a good job of kind of putting that in right now and instilling it. I watched him film with him yesterday, just showing what he's done and, you know, with Houston and what it's supposed to look like when he was in Memphis. So both of those teams are really good defensively.